On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we climb aboard the world's only flying B-25H model. Stay tuned. Warbird Radio Presents, the Barbie 3 story, starts now. She's the last flyable B-25H model and goes by the name Barbie 3. Her nose is noticeably different from other B-25s. Barbie packs four 50-caliber machine guns and one 75-millimeter cannon right up front. To say that she packs a punch is a bit of an understatement. In World War II, the H model played havoc on Japanese shipping. But today, the Barbie 3 and the other warbirds operated by History Flight fly for a different mission. Today, History Flight, a 501c3 corporation, tours the country raising money to help rescue the remains of fallen Pacific Campaign veterans. Last year, the group located the remains of over 130 World War II heroes. Here now to tell us more about it is History Flight's chief pilot, John Mackinson.
Well, the organization started about 7 years ago with one SNJ-6, which is a Navy version of the AT-6 Texan. And we bought a second airplane and went on tour, which was very successful. Then the third year, we added a steerman to our collection. So we flew with the three airplanes, the primary trainer and the advanced trainer. And then last spring, we accumulated the B-25 bomber, which is the H model, which is the only H model left flying in the world. The distinguishment of the H model is it's got the 75-millimeter cannon, and it was used primarily as an attack airplane in the South Pacific to sink Japanese shipping and bust holes in the mountains where the Japanese were hiding.
History Flight does a little more, though, than just fly airplanes, don't they? There's a lot of preservation work that they do.
Yes, there's a lot of preservation work. Of course, our main goal is our World War II veterans, to keep their memory alive, and we also do a search every year for MIAs from World War II. There's over 78,000 unaccounted for servicemen in World War II, and last year on the island of Tarawa in the South Pacific, we located the remains of 139 missing Marines. And on the island of Yap, we found a pilot still buried under his F-6F Hellcat where it crashed in the jungle, and the armor plating collapsed in over top of him, keeping his remains intact. This past spring, we located the remains of two more servicemen. We finally got the military to take us seriously, and they're going to do an expedition this summer to Tarawa. There's a bill passed in Congress appropriating funds to recover those remains positively, ID them, and bring them home and give them a proper ceremonial burial.
This is over 60 years now, and you guys are digging around out there trying to find these guys and bring them home, our lost warriors. What does that mean to you personally? What have you taken away from all of this?
Well, I don't know. Ever since I can remember, as a child of 4 or 5 years old, there's something that always drew me to, World War II and aviation and the Navy and everything. My grandfather served in the Royal Navy in World War I, and sometimes I think possibly, I'm a reincarnated World War II aviator because my passion has always been with these old airplanes. I've never had any desire to fly anything newer. To me, I get to fly a lot of interesting people, hear a lot of interesting stories, fly family members who told me that, their father or grandfather, used to fly in these airplanes and, hear their stories. And, they get to share the experience of what it was like for them. The AT-6 Texan, that was the advanced fighter trainer. So every fighter pilot had to qualify in that airplane. Every Navy pilot, that's the aircraft they learned to land on the aircraft carrier in. So, the AT-6 alone has a lot of significance to World War II aviation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When you roll up in this B-25, the H model, I'm sure a lot of people kind of look at it funny the first time they see it. What is that on the nose? Why doesn't it have a bombardier's compartment? It is a unique airplane. It's the only one, the only surviving H model. Talk about it a little bit. Tell us about the Barbie 3, the history behind the airplane.
Well, the Barbie 3 is the history behind it, it was the number two H model off the production line of 1,000 built. Number one got destroyed in evaluation. And so number two, it went to Wright-Patterson, and it spent its life there at Wright-Patterson, flying evaluation missions, training missions, running between there and MacDill in Florida. The H model is significant because of the 75mm cannon in the nose and 50 caliber machine guns mounted in the nose. You know, it was designed as a low-level attack airplane that did its missions at 50 feet off the ground or water, flying at 300 mile an hour. It was basically the World War II version of the A-10 Warthog that the Army uses today.
And looks somewhat like the A-10 with the twin tails, and if you use your imagination, I guess you could kind of imagine that. A fun airplane to fly for you?
Yes, it's a very enjoyable airplane. Of course, it's a distinct privilege to be able to fly it because it's the only one left in the world. You know, every time we're up in that airplane, we're doing something that nobody else in this world is doing, and that's flying in an H model Mitchell. And, you know, to me, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. You know, I'm, you know, flying a national treasure, and I want to keep it flying.
What are some of the precautions that you take with history flight? I'm sure that as you can hear the T-6 taking off right now, everyone who flies that airplane is an instructor pilot. And I'm sure there's some precautions with the B-25 as well that are unique in that regard.
Well, the B-25, you know, it's a big airplane, and it's a radial-powered airplane, of course, and none of the young aviators today have any radial or round-engine experience. So, you know, we have to train them how to fly a real airplane, as I call it, you know, with the old round engines where you've got to manage the power. You just can't horse it around. You got to be gentle with it. You know, you got to talk it into, you know, picking up RPM and going down the runway, nice smooth throttle movements. You know, everything happens slowly in that airplane, so you have to plan ahead. You know, engine management, when it's coming into land, you want to pre-plan your landing because you just can't pull the power off at descend. You've got to pull the power off in two-inch increments, reducing the manifold pressure to allow that engine to cool slowly. You can never reverse load that engine, which means you can never have the power pulled off to the point where the propeller is driving the engine, which, you know, would lead to a could lead to a catastrophic main bearing failure, which is very expensive. So there's a lot of things to learn about flying these old radial powered airplanes, and there's a lot of pilot technique involved. The Mitchell is a big airplane. It takes being heavy, it takes a lot of power to accelerate. And, you know, it doesn't decelerate quickly either as a result. The AT-6 Texan, that was the advanced fighter trainer of World War II, and it was the most difficult of all the World War II fighters to fly because of its ground looping tendencies. The best way to describe that would be like every time you land the T-6 is like driving your car backwards at 70 mile an hour down the highway. It wants to swap ends and go tail first. So the T-6 was a very difficult airplane to fly. It earned the nickname the Pilot Maker because if you didn't make it in that airplane, you didn't move on into the single-seat fighters, and they moved you into a Bombardier or Navigator or put you somewhere else. So just being able to handle the AT-6 Texan back in World War II for a 200-hour pilot at the time, you know, that was quite an achievement. You know, our requirements is that, you know, I want 1,500 hours time in airplanes and 500 hours in a tailwheel before I'll even consider checking you out in the T-6 to fly it.
It's a different world today, and these are, as you said, national treasures. Everyone who flies with history flight in the T-6 gets to fly in the front seat, something you don't see a whole lot. You don't see a whole lot of that anymore, and as we said, everybody is an instructor pilot. To talk about some of the stories you hear from folks crawling out of the front seat of that airplane, it's got to be a different experience for them.
Well, it is. I've flown a lot of World War II aviators, of course. I got a chance, this would be already 4 years ago, to fly the Vice Air Marshal for the Royal Air Force during World War II. And that was quite a privilege. He was the first guy to shoot down an ME-262. That was the first jet plane of World War II that the Germans developed. Last year, I got to fly a C-47 pilot who actually flew the armistice papers up from Italy to Germany that ended World War II, I've flown quite a few aviators that the last time they were in an airplane was during World War II, that when they came back, they associated flying with death and carnage, which is what it was in World War II, and they never stepped foot in an airplane again, and, you know, a family member would buy them a gift, and once they got in the airplane and their hands on the controls, you know, all the past bad experiences went away, and the joy of flying suddenly was back for them, and, you know, they'd literally have tears in their eyes. I flew one gentleman out of Saratoga Springs, New York, and, you know, we circled over the National Cemetery there, and, you know, he told me that last time he was in an airplane was World War II, and he never ever thought he'd see his final resting place from above, and, you know, that was a very emotional experience for him. You know, the family members, you know, they really get a lot of enjoyment out of it. They get to experience a piece of history. They get to do what, you know, their grandfather or father did and, you know, get their hands on the controls. Everybody who flies in the front seat of the T-6, they become an essential crew member at that point because they have to retract the landing gear on takeoff. From the rear seat, we can lower it, but it can only be retracted from the front seat. So once we're airborne, they get to retract the landing gear, and then non-pilots alike and pilots, we give them a brief flying lesson, show them how everything works, and let them fly the airplane. And pretty soon we're moving on to rolls and loops, Immelmanns, split S's. You know, as much as their heart desires, we can give them, show them World War II combat maneuvers. And when we have our SNJ and T6 together, you know, we'll instruct them in formation flying, show them what it's like to be in formation, show them how you join in formation and break away, and, you know, give the basically as much of the World War II experience as we can.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation with History Flight's John Mackinson. Now showing on AeroCinema.com.
It is a discovery thought lost to war and time. Hidden for decades, buried deep in German soil, are the plans for a bomber aircraft. A flying machine with roots in a light transport plane of a curious design. It is a design with ties to the earliest aircraft. A concept that emphasizes stability. An aircraft that, before long, vanishes into history. But German engineers have ideas for its use and twist it into a weapon of war. A platform with which they hope to bomb their enemies into submission and resurrect the German Empire to its former glory. And they are not alone in pursuing these backwards canard planes for deadly purposes. As war begins and aircraft production ramps up, England too looks to tail first designs with which to wage war. Other nations are not far behind in pursuit of a tail first plane that can meet their needs. Journey through the history of these unusual aircraft. Canards of War.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson, host of the RC Scale Builder Show. If you're interested in radio-controlled scale models, join us every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern for our live show. We'll be covering the latest news in RC Scale and have some great interviews every week. That's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. with rebroadcast throughout the week, the RC Scale Builder Show here on Warbird Radio.
Our thanks to Ezel Aviation for generously supporting Warbird Radio. To find out more, visit them online at EzelAviation.com. That's EzelAviation.com.
We've got your six. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in.
Take off.
Welcome back. On this episode, we're visiting with History Flight's chief pilot, John Mackinson. History Flight operates several Warbirds, including the only flyable B-25H model, the Barbie 3. Each year, History Flight takes their airplanes out on tour to help raise money to locate the remains of fallen World War II Pacific Campaign heroes. Here now is History Flight's John Mackinson.
Well, if folks want to get involved in History Flight, as you mentioned, this is a tour. You're in Atlanta this weekend, but you're moving on, presumably next week, to another city, another town. How can folks find out about where you're going to be next, and how can they, most importantly, how can they go up and go fly with you?
Well, we're actually located on the web real easy if you look us up at historyflight.com. And we have an 88 number, 888-743-3311. We can be reached on that. If you Google Barbie 3, which is the B-25 and B-25, that's going to pull up History, and it'll link you into our site.
We'll also quick link historyflight.com to our website, so if you're trying to find it, folks, just look for it in the bottom section of this story along with all the pictures we've taken today. You're headed to Houston, I understand, next. Is that...
Yes, the airplane goes to Houston for flying next weekend. The weekend after that, we'll be flying 2 weeks in Dallas. And then we go to Denver 2 weeks. Then we go to Indianapolis, Racine, Wisconsin, up by Oshkosh. Then to Pittsburgh, and then Long Island, New York, where we do a lot of flying every year. Down to Philadelphia and North Carolina, South Carolina. By then, it puts us into October, and we'll be back in Florida for the winter months where we bounce around different cities in Florida.
It's a lot of B-25 flying for you.
Yes, it is.
Your full-time job, too,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, this is a full-time job for me. I train all our pilots. I supervise all our pilots. I'm in charge of the maintenance. I make sure that the airplanes are kept to the highest standard. And, it's my name in all the logbooks, and it's my name on authorization certificate for these airplanes to fly, so I keep a very tight grip on this. I've got 20 years background experience with these old World War II airplanes, and it's hard to find good people to work on them, so we have a select few people that we bring in for the major inspections to help work on them, and Russ and myself on the road, we do all the line maintenance, and we take very good care of the airplanes.
What do you want folks to take away from this, who come out and fly with you and hear this story? What do you want them to remember about all of this?
Well, the most important thing is they need to remember the people that fought and died and the survivors that gave us the freedoms we enjoy today. World War II is long enough ago, that's going 60, 70 years ago now, that, it's two generations away and people have forgotten. And people don't realize that the atrocities that happened in World War II, the sacrifices that were made. And, we got a lot of freedoms today that we take for granted. And unfortunately, we're losing them every day. And it's important that we remember who fought for these freedoms. And it goes right back to the founding of America. The people that left Europe, that came over here and left Asia, to find a better way of life, to get away from the socialism and the communism and the dictatorships to found America. America is the greatest nation on earth, and we need to remember that. And we need to remember the people that fought for that freedom, because if we come apathetic in it and don't realize what's going on, pretty soon we're going to end up like Europe did, becoming, socialized and everything, and high taxes, where in America, look at it this way, you can start off with nothing and become a millionaire. It's been done by countless people. They didn't depend on the government. They got off their butts and they worked hard and they made a life for themselves. But with socialism and everything like that, the government programs, they're good to a very important part of it. However, when they take away the people's ability to go out and make something for themselves, if they take away the incentive where if a person works hard, where they can make the monies and get the fruits of their labors to build a better life for themselves, people just don't want to work anymore. And unfortunately, we can see that happening, day in and day out, where, more and more people feel the government should take care of them. You remember Kennedy's famous words, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And we need to remember that. It's the American people that's made America great. It's not the government. It's the everyday worker that, you know, goes from washing floors to, you know, being a doctor or a banker. You know, it's everybody working hard that makes America great. And there's no free lunch in this world. And freedom isn't cheap. It's been paid for by the blood of our forefathers and people today. We got folks fighting over in Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, people dying for freedoms that they believe in. Mm-hmm. You know, America's always been the greatest military on earth because it was all volunteers. Nobody forced them to join. They do it because they believe in the freedoms. And it's very important that those freedoms aren't taken away from us and not forgotten how we got them.
Well said. Anything you want to add to this? Anything about the airplanes or anything else you want to add?
Well, you know, come on out and fly with us. Flying in Barbie 3 or B-25, you know, that's a lifetime experience. You know, we have different organizations that want to stop these old World War II airplanes from flying. They want to stop the old airplanes from flying. It's a piece of history. And, you know, we got AOPA fighting for it and Experimental Aircraft Association and different groups. But, you know, it takes a lot of behind the background scenes to keep these airplanes flying. And with the stroke of the pen, the government could shut us down at any time. So we're, you know, we're operating as an educational foundation. And that is the only way we're allowed to fly people in the B-25,
right,
as an educational foundation. And that is a privilege given to us that can be taken away at any time. The AT-610 Tex, unfortunately, was a certificated aircraft with the FAA, which gives us a whole greater latitude where, you know, we can offer flight instruction in it, mm-hmm, with basically no restrictions placed on us. But the bomber especially is an airplane that's comes with a lot of restrictions placed upon us. And, you know, there's a day will come when we're not allowed to fly these airplanes anymore. You know, they are, you know, they're getting old. You know, the Barbie 3 was built in 1943. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 67 years old. Our Stearman was built in 41. However, too, it was a certificated airplane rebuilt in 95. So the Stearman will continue flying. But the bombers especially and the fighters, there's going to be a day where they're all grounded and they'll just be static museum pieces where you're allowed to look at them and they won't even let you touch them, much less be able to fly in them and smell them and hear the vibration and the noise and feel the heat off the engines. You know, it's going to, unfortunately, the day will come along that it'll be the end of an era.
That's all the time we have for this episode, but for more information on History Flight and the Barbie 3, just click on our website, warbirdradio.com, and visit the quick link posted inside this story. You'll also find detailed pictures and even videos of our time with John and the Barbie 3. Thanks for listening, and now stay tuned for more Warbird Radio right after this.
This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson, host of the RC Scale Builder Show. If you're interested in radio-controlled scale models, join us every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern for our live show. We'll be covering the latest news in RC Scale and have some great interviews every week. That's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. with rebroadcast throughout the week, the RC Scale Builder Show, here on Warbird Radio.
Our thanks to Ezel Aviation for generously supporting Warbird Radio. To find out more, visit them online at ezelaviation.com. That's ezelaviation.com.
Now, this is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
Now showing on aerocinema.com.
If anyone had said you're going to get involved in auto charas, I'd have said that straight windmill thing. No. As soon as I got the eyesight test, the doctor said, "What if you never be able to land an aeroplane?" Oh. I made suicidal pass after pass trying to get the thing down. And after several times doing this thing, with no fuel showing on the gauges, I called up and said, couldn't the crew bail out? There was no sense in them staying with me while I was trying to do it. And all the time we were flying, we had an atom bomb on board. And when we were in a certain area of the North Pole from Canada, if we got the message, we had a target to attack in Russia. People say, why do you have so many? My answer is, it's like having a harem of girls or women. They're all the same basic design, but they kind of differ in nature. I remember when I landed, a Covey of Broccoli was looking at me from a distance. He said, yeah, same build, he'll do. Meaning I was the same build as Sean Connery.
The Logbook Series, featuring Ken Wallace, now showing on AeroCinema.com.
This is Warbird Radio.